So welcome to this episode of Eurobyte. We have the 18th of May, 2025, and just so much has happened this year. And well, we always joke and always make the same lame joke every episode. We blink, and I wouldn't have been surprised in the year 2025 if the meme had come true and suddenly in the Vatican, Donald Trump would actually have appeared in full-on Pope regalia. I mean, you know, it's 2025 and 2024, you know, what we thought reality has been totally pushed to the side. But yes, so interesting things have been happening, and we'll just laser focus on the two major European two major Western European powers, one of them being Great Britain, the other one being Germany. Germany, obviously, very interesting developments vis-a-vis wanting to ban the AfD in order to save democracy, and having the domestic spy agency categorizing AfD as really, really extremist. And that's why, in order to save democracy, we must ban them. And interesting enough, this week, interesting turn of events, surprise, the case of the domestic, one of the 17 domestic spy agencies, wasn't quite as ironclad as we thought. So we're going to get into that. Fabian's already...
Let me ask you, is it weird to you that you have 17 domestic spy agencies and we have 17? I just, you know, it's just a weird...
Well, you know? There will be an interesting numerological or otherwise rabbit hole to go down to. If any of the viewers have got any insights, I'd love to hear it. I mean,
it's some kind of Fibonacci connection, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, oh God, brings me back to my programming classes and such. Yeah. So lots of stuff happening in Germany, and Fabian is already very happy to jump on that, and pointing out in the United Kingdom. Oh, goodness, has Keir Starmer, also monikered as Keir Starling, suddenly gone really, really based, really, really turned into Enoch Powell? We're going to get into that in 1 second. But Fabian, what is happening in Germany with one of our 17 domestic spy agencies? Have they changed their mind? Oh, oops, sorry, my bad. The AfD is no longer as extremist as we thought. Over to you.
All right. So thank you. And it's good to be here, guys. Good to be back. I am going to go completely on theory and prediction lane, but here we go. I personally believe that the network of the AfD within the MAGA movement is very strong. So strong that members of Congress, senators, speak out in favor of the AfD. Members of the cabinet speak it. I mean, Marco Rubio, you know, making the case for the AfD. You sort of have to make a conclusion that in the Biden years, some of the AfD members were going to America, going to CPAC, going to the Young Republicans in New York, going to a lot of MAGA Republicans, and building networks that are now using that power leverage to put pressure on the German government. Again, this is completely my opinion, my theory, but I believe this is a core example of the international right, if you just want to call it like that for a second, working together and putting pressure on the German government, basically saying, if you guys want to continue to work with us, we are not going to deal with you spying on your own people, spying on your own parties. And look, JD Vance made the case in Munich. He said, we cannot protect a freedom if you can't uphold freedom of speech. We're not going to work with this together. This comes out of the mouth of JD Vance himself personally. But the rest of that, I believe that during the Biden years, the AfD really used that chance to build strong networks in Washington, in America, with the MAGA movement to say, we're not going to put up with this anymore. I have zero proof, but I believe the way that, you know, play was run, it seems very evident that what I just said is the case.
Good theory. I like it.
I haven't come across it, but I mean to lend credence to what Fabian just said. I mean, things started definitely changing when suddenly Elon Musk had an interview with Alice Weidel, the current head of AFD, who defies a lot of the stereotypes that they would have against a far-right person, because Alice Weidel is an open gay woman, never made two bones about it, speaks Chinese, is entrepreneurial. So, and then Elon Musk had an interview with her, and the interview was of mixed quality. I mean, both of them had interesting takes on the German past and all, where I'm like, well, you know, I mean, much as I like both of you, you're not entirely accurate. Be that as it may, it lends credence to what Fabian says. But something else has happened. So there's a professor of constitutional law from the University of Oldenburg. Now, the University of Oldenburg is not the most prestigious university in Germany, and it's a pretty far left university. However, every now and then you come across principled leftist people, and that professor from the University of Oldenburg had gone over the expose of the domestic spy agency. And mind you, things in the German deep state increasingly are weird. So quick reminder, flashback, 2024, Fabian, where the identitarian activist Martin Sellner had a conference in Potsdam, and the German media, the German government and George Soros subsidized fact-checking network Corrective, somehow managed to get hold of what was said in the room, even though they weren't invited. So the domestic spy agency seems to have passed items on to Corrective, and interesting enough, Greenpeace nowadays also does far right watching. So that definitely was interesting.
And that was back in November of 2023.
Right.
And when the AFD, in the first time in their history, reached the 20% mark in the approval polls, that's when they rolled out that story. You have to remember, at the same time, there were heavy farmer protests. And I believe that the farming lobby in Germany is one of the last traditional conservative bastions of the working class, if you will, the working people. The German farmers are still very conservative. Remember, these were the guys that, and again, this is not just Bavarian farmers. This is German farmers all over. These are the guys that, with their tractors, stop the former Green Minister of Economics, Robert Habeck, from entering the shore when he was vacationing on an island. They blockaded the port. You know, these are the people that you really also see with a lot of traditionalist symbols. The farmers are very, I'd say very one of the last traditional conservative bastions in Germany, Christian conservative bastions. Same with the farmers in the Netherlands. You guys remember the big farmer protests in the Netherlands. Again, these are what Eva Vladingbroek once said, the traditional conservative Christian last European standing. And when they started revolting, One of the playbooks that the left has is, we gotta get out a story on the AFD, because people were afraid that the AFD was going to use this motion or momentum that you did see in the Netherlands and use that to their advantage. So they brought out that story. I remember it was a Monday, farmers were on the street, and by Friday they had all of, you know, the do-gooders mobilized to go on the street and protest against the AFD. Because of that story.
Yeah, so that supports the point I'm making. So remember, so the government has the power to get people on the street through all the party-owned media. So the German Social Democrat Party owns quite a bit of media, and then there's the state-owned media. So they were able to do that. They were able to pass on to Corrective and to Greenpeace what was actually said inside. So there must have been a German domestic spy agency person present at that meeting. Now, a bit later, we are in a similar situation where the German domestic spy agency, well, one of the 17, said, look, we've got an expose, but it's still kind of secret. But certain select media were already allowed to talk about what was actually in there. But nonetheless, it came out. And there was a professor. So again, highlighting how deep state works everywhere.
Now, and just one point to that, too. We are living in times where it was the governing party that sent out protesters against the opposition. Now, there were people in Germany saying, oh, that sounds like Romania, 1989. you know?
Yeah.
When Romania was still under the Eastern, in the Eastern Bloc.
It is remarkable. So now somehow, you know, that expose came out, and a professor from the otherwise far left University of Oldenburg comes out and says, look, this is the most ridiculous piece of expose of legal scholarship that I've ever seen in my life. And it had ridiculous bits. It had like Twitter clippings. It had things that people said that were absolutely innocuous along the lines of, well, you know, I don't think everybody that doesn't have German ancestry should be made German. Something that used to be the law in Germany until 1998, if not 1999. And so like innocuous little bits were puzzled together. And I mean, I had been working as a exam corrector and tutor for certain lectures in a second tier UK university. And had I gotten like such an expose as a first semester exam, I would have slapped the student with it and said, look, you shouldn't study law. This is clearly not your way. But it was so bad, it wasn't even funny. And interesting enough, mainstream outlets commented that much, and a professor from the University of Oldenburg said that much. So that is remarkable. I'm not still quite 100% sure what to make of it, other than, you know, sometimes there are principled leftist people who will call a spade and who are not entirely crazy. Then add to that what Fabian said, and I hadn't thought about it, but the more I think about it, Fabian's right, the AfD has gotten very well networked. And lo and behold, suddenly it appears that the domestic spy agency was backpedaling, and the AfD that had its extremism score upgraded by the domestic spy agency now had it downgraded, which tells you a lot. I mean, there's a very rich field to talk about the competence crisis that we're in, you know, for various reasons. But yeah, the domestic spy agency, the woker these agencies get, on the one hand, that's bad news for any sort of reasonable side. On the other hand, it's good news because they're so bad that they manage to ruin even such kind of exposés that are handed to them on a silver platter. Probably some thoughts from your side about that, Fabian.
Well, I think that to put it bluntly, if you want to fabricate something or if you want to make the case, you have to make the strong case. And I think that if even, you know, professors from a far leftist institution say this is beyond ridiculous, these people have to they have to play their cards a little bit better, period.
Yeah. So clearly interesting things are happening in Germany, where we, again, reminder what Fabian said, in 2023, the old playbook worked. The AfD that was riding high at 20% was driven back, Fabian, I think, even to something to 14%, 15%. It seemed to work at the time. And you know, they orchestrated everything they could, the state-run media, the state-adjacent media, and it worked. And now, increasingly, it gets harder and harder, even though, I mean, I do get chatted up in the United Kingdom. Christian, how come that the east of Germany has gone so far right? Weren't they a bunch of leftists? And when I tell them, well, you know, they know propaganda when they see it better than the West Germans. And then I get a totally puzzled NPC expression. And so that is interesting. And unless you've got any final thoughts, shall we move on to the United Kingdom, where something interesting is happening, and actually where we see much more competent players in the power game at work? So let's move. Quick reminder, dear viewers. So the United Kingdom had elections last year. And the Tory party, the Conservative Party, was responsible for the highest, most skyrocketing immigration numbers, saw a bloated state apparatus, saw taxes going up. So nothing about this screaming Conservative. Labour came into power. And even during the election, Labour had partially overtaken the Conservatives on the left or on the right by having tougher rhetoric on immigration. However, once Labour came into power, they seemed to be on a classical left trajectory. They talked about land reform and having almost punitive inheritance taxes on the farmers, and they haven't still retracted that.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
So we are in the factory in Kentucky. This is Alp World HQ, and we are at the end of the packing line. So I'm going to show you how it works. We have the card, throw that in there. There's a packing slip, and then you have the Alp. And four, but that seems honestly like a lot. Three now, but it's good. These pack a punch that, you know, for a normal 19 brand, it'd be like eight. You know, we think three is fine. Next one. Again, four. Let's go three in just to keep it fair. Okay? There you go. So you can see you can get fast at this. And really, it's just a matter of repetition. This is kind of the assembly line that, you know, Henry Ford devised so long ago.
Tucker, stealing all the Alp again.
They ratcheted up they removed certain tax credits for the elderly to heat their homes in the winter. The government had a horrible response to the riots in Southport in the United Kingdom, where three little girls had been brutally murdered, one of them with as many as 130 stab wounds, and the government came down harder on the people who rioted against their girls being butchered than on the person having perpetrated that. So it seemed to be a leftist government that sold itself as centrist during the election campaign, but turned hard left once they got into power. Now, then something interesting happened. They got walloped in the recent council elections, where with Labour and the Conservatives losing something like 2/3 of their seats, and Reform UK, Nigel Farage's party is all but a far-right party. It's pretty milquetoasty. Party on the center-right, maybe. I wouldn't even call them particularly conservative on social issues. But something really interesting happened. Suddenly, Keir Starmer, our favorite robotic prime minister, came out and held a speech where he said, as the ONS sets out, 1 million people came into the country in 2023. Which is absolutely remarkable. That's four times the average rate, the rate of migration prior to that. They call it now the Boris bulge, where during the height of COVID, suddenly the Johnson government opened the floodgates and you had more migrants than ever before. So nota bene, a conservative government just opens the floodgate in a country that already had a net migration of 400,000 people. That may not sound like a lot to Americans, but the United Kingdom is a small island, so that's a city almost the size of Edinburgh every year. Then Keir Starmer went on saying Brexit was used to turn Britain into a one nation experiment in open borders. And that statement is remarkable on so many levels. So first of all, that a leftist government speaks about an open border experiment is remarkable, especially if we remember that documents leaked when Tony Blair swept into power in 1997, that they deliberately ramped up immigration to rub conservatives' noses in a bit of diversity. So it was never about the economy. It was always about that. But that then a leftist government said that open border experiment is over. But then they sneakily weaved in something. So they got competent people working from behind them.
It's very well focus grouped, believe
yes.
me.
So yeah. It is very, it's saying, well, you know, Brexit is still bad. And why is Brexit bad? Because the underlying force behind Brexit was always to turn us into this open border experiment, the Singapore on the Thames. And he goes on, Global Britain. That was the Tory, that was the Tory slogan. And right enough, the Tories were always hardcore globalists. And I mean, they massively conflicted with the United States, even the Obama administration, when they wanted to have their nuclear power plants financed and built by China. And then when they had Huawei building the backbone of their 5G networks, and it took massive American intervention to get that away. But yeah, bear in mind. So there's a very clever lefty point saying Brexit fundamentally was always an open border experiment. I mean, before that it was all hunky dory. In brackets, no. I mean, the United Kingdom received a lot of migrants from the European Union, you may say, well, that's not a problem. They're all highly skilled people. And you're like, yes and no. I mean, they got a lot of migrants from places like Romania, Romani, and other minorities who are not terribly economically prosperous in their home countries, moving directly into the UK social networks. But you had also a lot of young people moving into low-paying jobs because of skyrocketing high youth unemployment in Italy and Spain and pretty much most of the south of Europe. And what that does to the to the wages of the local working classes, you can imagine. It goes further. And again, they speak a lot of sense in what follows now. Skill shortages across the country, 2.8 million people out on long-term sickness. So the number might actually be higher. And I mean, at one point in the United Kingdom, they spoke about 2.8 to 5 million people in the UK out on benefits, alleged and probably and maybe real inability to work. And then he moves on to, he segues into another issue, which is bang on the money, where he says engineering apprenticeships have halved whilst visas have doubled. I mean, to Americans that might sound somewhat familiar. I'm tweeted on my Twitter timeline to Keir Starmer's Twitter account, and he says, Labour has organized the three largest deportation flights in UK history, and it's a 19 increase of deportation flights under Labour. Now, and we're seeing every trick that that the establishment plays on us. So hashtag law of small numbers. So the Tories deported 2,200 people under their in 1 year, and Labour deported 2,400. You know, if you've got like something like 600,000 people coming in, well, that's hardly good news, even if you can say, well, 19% of all people are coming in. So, but we are seeing a leftist government that's playing its cards very, very right, talking about things that the actual right wouldn't talk about. And I've got my thoughts what actually comes behind it. I would like to hear your thoughts, because this is the truly
here are my thoughts. Where do the conservatives stand? Where do the conservatives with Britain being such a, the Tories being the biggest disappointment on the face of the earth when it comes to conservatism, where's the conservative base in Britain? Is there anything that can build an opposition to this, or is it just going to continue? I mean, how has Nigel been doing? I haven't followed him in a long time, but I know that there were some disappointments about him recently as well, regarding all of this immigration.
Well, probably first your thoughts. I'm going to collect them.
Well, I would like to ask, you're in the UK. What do people believe anything coming out of Starmer's mouth? I mean, have they just forgotten everything? I mean, they've been lied to and propagandized and abused for decades. So to me, it would be like Biden getting up saying, you know, I love MAGA and I want to, you know, help them. I mean, it's nonsensical to me. But
yeah, I'm going to get into the credibility question first and then into the question that Fabian posed. So the credibility question now, Starmer has managed to alienate even the far left of his party. And you've got like horrendous talking heads in the YouTube commentary. I had like a young guy, Owen Jones, who's like, oh my God, this is a far right government. And you hear that a lot. Talks in Scotland. Scotland's still in its gut feeling pretty leftist. And people are like, oh, this is clearly a right wing government. I don't think anybody believes him. I mean, not the people who had been alienated by the Tories, nor the actual Tories, and increasingly the far left of Labour. And I mean, there's part of Labour that has been alienated all along. There are traditional towns called the Red Wall, like towns like Liverpool and near Manchester, who've always voted Labour just by the economic structure of that area. And those towns had been voting in part pro-Brexit even. So where Labour totally abandoned that economically leftist but socially conservative patriotic base. So I don't think people give Starmer much more credibility.
It's obvious these people are all actors. They'll do anything, say anything to just stay in power. That's the only goal, to continue the destruction of the West. So they're just chameleons, you know, like Zelensky, like Macron, like all of them, MERS, you know?
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
It is interesting. And I mean, then the slightly more versatile audience will not have forgotten that there wasn't any terrorist or any migrant who through Keir Starmer's work as a migration and human rights lawyer hasn't supported that. But I'm going to say one thing. If Labour comes through and ratchets up like deportation flights 10 times, which isn't that hard, but because the numbers are so low, then yes, a lot of people can be swayed. So, I mean, I think all three of us are constantly disappointed in terms of how quickly normies forget or how quickly the news cycle works on their mind. And if Labour does anything symbolically that looks like they're doing a lot, other things will get forgotten. Mark that as a footnote, what the actual Labour agenda is. Move on to Fabian.
But the Tories are the same. Or were yes. the same.
Yes. So, yeah. The last election, it was a Labour landslide. Was not that Labour gained any votes. The Conservatives just stayed at home. And essentially, Rishi Sunak, the unelected globalist creature that was at the helm of the Tory party, thought he had checkmated a right-wing party, Nigel Farage's party, by calling snap election. But Nigel Farage actually then snapped a couple of seats. The party didn't do quite as well as they hoped, but they had barely any time to set up an infrastructure. Which brings us to their role, but there's an interesting one. The Tories then tried to rebrand and put a woman of Nigerian origin, Kemi Badenoch, as their leader. There was a slightly more conservative, much more aggressively anti-migration person called Robert Jendrick. It wasn't him, it was Kemi Badenoch. And then they celebrate themselves. Ha ha, see how diverse as a party we are. And yeah, you should see Labour, how white they are. And then we're like, just know your audience. And sort of where they, you know, they try to play that old trope, oh, you know, the left are the real racist, blah, 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 and kind of trying to enter their framework. In the UK Parliament for a number of months, it has been delightful where Mrs. Badenoch, who is just like this quintessential politician, whenever she stands up and tries to chastise Keir Starmer, even Keir Starmer, as robotic as he is, he's like, ha ha, the right honorable lady to my left, she has been the one who's been letting those people in, and she's been the one making the argument for migration. And even a guy who's not necessarily quick on his feet or anything as a rhetoric, quick on his feet force like Donald Trump just smacks down Kemi Badenoch. So the Tories seem to be done as a party. Again, never count them out, but this time they definitely seem to be done. And even Labour seems to be very much wounded, and we might be witnessing, even though it's structurally very difficult, the beginning of the end of the two-party system in the UK, because other parties that were successful were, well, first of all, Reform UK did brilliantly well. And we can talk about Nigel Farage not having been... So quite often backpedaling a bit and not talking right-wing enough, but he's kind of upped his rhetoric at least on that over the last couple of weeks. But the one thing he's been really good, building a credible party organization, and sort of a friend of mine who's recently entered the party told me, look, he's interested in standing as a local council in a municipal election, and they made him go through an online questionnaire. Look, is there anything at all that you've ever said on Twitter or elsewhere that might come back to bite us? And so there's good vetting. I mean, you always, when you're a right-wing party and you're marginalized, you always have to contend with a certain quality problem. So yes, Reform is rising. They're not quite as aggressive in their rhetoric as they should be. And Nigel Farage a couple of months ago had ruled out. Oh no, we are not talking about mass deportations. Now he backpedaled and said, no, we are definitely talking about mass deportations. So definitely something interesting is happening there. And I mean, the Tory party, nobody believes them anymore. And I mean, in all fairness to the guy, Keir Starmer is very, very good pointing them out, everything that happened under Boris Johnson. And if you looked at any of the statistics, the spikes under the Tories, particularly after the COVID lockdown, are remarkable. And it seems to be the government at the time, the official rationale is, well, they were panicking because so many, because of the generous benefits of the UK working population, but also benefit as is, Many then went on benefits post-COVID with actual or perceived illnesses. So they're like, oh my God, somebody needs to do the work. Somebody needs to man all the airports. And you had an incredible spike. So that's an interesting bit. Probably I want to point out another bit. So which is the interesting bit, if indeed labor pulls it off, and even if labor goes quote unquote hard right and ups migrations not only tenfold but maybe even 100-fold, I mean, even that wouldn't be enough to turn the clock back to pre-Boris or let alone pre-labor 1997 days. But say they do something remarkable and they get the situation under control, then, well, the one person in the back behind labor is obviously still Tony Blair. And Tony Blair hasn't stopped talking about his two pet projects. He's always been digital ID and digital currencies. And so he is working tirelessly in the background. And whenever suddenly Keir Starmer doesn't seem to be going quite as hard left and suddenly seems to be going populist, you can be sure that Tony Blair is whispering into his ear. But that's probably by far the most formidable foe that we're having. As long as the left goes woke, as long as the left goes crazy, it manages to rile everybody up, even eventually the old left. But when they seem to be sensible, that's when they need to be watched most, particularly characters like Starmer.
How do you see Starmer spearheading this whole Ukraine thing? I mean, what is in Britain's interests to do this at all?
I would need to speculate in terms of rationale. I mean, I would need to go back to British history, where the British foreign policy establishment and deep state were always fervently anti-Russian. And
I think that's right. I think it is history, and MI6 has been behind this the whole time for 10 years. So
the word Crimea should remind us there was the Crimean War. And when the ailing Ottoman Empire was the sick man of Europe and Russia just kept gobbling up what was of the Ottoman Empire, I think Russia is seeing itself genuinely as the successor of Eastern Rome. I think Russia at that time wanted to retake Constantinople or Istanbul, and it was the Brits who then intervened. So there's always that fervently anti-Russian streak, and we can go down a total rabbit hole why that might be.
The thing is, I find it so, and I agree, I completely agree. We completely see the traces of this maritime power, anti-land power, anti-Eurasian, anti-Eurasian power being Russia, push that the Brits have continually done. What I find so fascinating is that they're doing it as a crumbling country. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, domestically, whenever I don't think of Great Britain at the moment as this great beacon of, you know, Anglo-Saxon pride. I look at
Great Britain. Well, it's not about Anglo-Saxon. It's about globalists. That's where one of the globalist power centers are. So they have power. They have the EU. They had Biden. I mean, that they were, it's dropping now with Trump, I hope, but I mean, they're very powerful and it's all centered there and in other places, I think.
Mm-hmm. As I said, there are two things I always want to make about the current state of the UK. The current state of the UK is dire.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At US Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. US Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
In every conceivable way. At the same time, I don't want that to be mistaken in saying anything about the British people. I mean, I've been living here on and off for almost 13 years, and it's one of the friendliest, nicest, gentle, most generous people you'll meet on the planet, which is why they're so susceptible to be taken for a ride and having their generosity abused. I mean, there are a couple of things that sometimes always break my heart when I say I'm on a train in London, and the lovely conductor who looks like a cartoon figure from Postman Pat gently tells the person of clearly West African origin that he doesn't have a first class ticket, hence he needs to vacate first class, and he's then derided by that person with the most vicious profanities. And you know, the people being British, nobody says anything, they keep reading their newspaper, and that's a sad state of affairs. So it's a brilliant country, it's a brilliant people, the British Isles. I mean, no wonder they, you know, they were so successful in so many ways. But I mean, you put your finger on the pulse. So yes, it is globalism. I mean, even the Tories had this vision of the Singapore on the Thames. And if we look at Singapore, the even though it's on, you know, we can talk about how brilliantly Lee Kuan Ho, the Singaporese prime minister of the 1960s, like drafted as a very successful place, but you know, it's sort of a mishmash and has a bit of an artificial feeling to it. But two data points. How globalism works.
I'm sorry, I got to go to another show. Yeah. But you guys finish up if you don't mind. Yeah. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you. Right. Two interesting data points. So the last British minister of the economy was a Canadian guy by the name of Mark Carney. He is now the minister. Is it the prime minister of Canada? And the mayor of the city of London is a American guy. Not the actual London, the city. That is still a guy by the name of Khan, Siddiqui Khan, but it's actually the smaller, powerful financial center, the city of London, which has been actually there since, I think, medieval times. That is an American guy right now with solid financial ties. So it is interesting. I think Fabian, I'm not sure who said it, the anywheres versus the somewhere people sort of being the big struggle of our time. Probably some thoughts from your side.
As you know, I'm still sort of reflecting on what you recently just said. You and Todd just both said with this shift in how Great Britain, on the one hand, is this great country, and on the other hand, it's basically reflecting interests that are not its own. I do find it interesting that Trump and Starmer did make a deal, because I remember when Boris was in power, I thought that Boris and Trump were going to get a big deal done. So there seems to still be that, I mean, Trump has a heart for the Anglosphere. He really does. And I think he has a big heart for Great Britain. And it's going to be interesting to see how that will play out in the coming years. But Great Britain is in dire straits, and as are many Western countries. I'll put it to you this way to end our show today. When Douglas McGregor was asked by Tucker Carlson on whether Great Britain was finished or basically Europe was finished, McGregor clearly disagreed and said, absolutely not. They are not finished. He said, are you kidding me? Great Britain has so many great people. And he said, they're gonna wake up and they're going to get their good people back in power. It's going to take some time, but they're going to sort this out. Would you agree with that? Or do you think that things are too down the tube that it's not worth saving?
No, it's always worth saving. So yes, I mean, it is a great country that has given the world so much. I mean, like the Victorians invented, in a way, a lot of, if not childhood as we have it now, then the aesthetics of childhood, that, you know, that you put like nice cutesy wallpapers in your room and having nice cutesy cups for your kids. I mean, it's all like Victorian aesthetic. No, I mean, and then, you know, lots of you know, industrialization and a lot of modern science and the modern thinkers. No, it's worth saving. Can it be saved? That's anyone's guess. I mean, interesting enough, the other thing that Keir Starmer now starts conceding. I mean, for a long time, Fabian, the main argument the main argument for immigration is, well, A, it makes us a better society because diverse makes us smarter, and B, it makes us more economically successful. And now even Keir Starmer is conceding, look, all these migrants that are coming in, they're costing us a lot of money. I mean, mm-hmm. you've got 72% of Somali immigrants being on benefits and in social housing, 72% of them. And for a lot of other groups, it's worse. And I mean, the migration in the last couple of years has been so, you know, obviously it's been different in so far, like so many people come from all over the world at once. Whereas if you have a lot of people coming, say, from Pakistan, even though that, you know, created in its extreme form the problem with the grooming gangs, something we're not getting into today, but at least that was a pretty homogenic community to get used to and kind of, you know, okay, you can wrap your way around their thinking and probably sooner or later things might be worked out. Whereas if you got 100 different peoples from all around the world, then you're almost, you know, in biblical times, the big Babylonian confusion. And that's sort of my convoluted way of saying certain areas are so diverse and there's so many people have arrived, getting rid of them and disentangling or unscrambling that egg will be very, very hard. Also, it is so interesting what low-skill migration does to a country. I mean, suddenly, yeah, there's somebody who's always benefiting from it, but low-skill migration also sets you back technologically. So I can give you a couple of examples. In Germany, growing up in the 1980s, the only car wash places I saw were these super manual car washes. You know, you entered it and it was all automated, like these big brushes going, and then mm-hmm. I sort of found that really exciting as a kid sitting inside the car watching that. Now you've got like people like actually polishing your car and cost less than the automated car wash. And in the UK, you see that all over the place. So return to that. Then you've got all the Deliveroo guys on bicycles and electric scooters delivering stuff. And so in a lot of ways, once the industry that they were purported to help when they were brought in large numbers in the 1960s, the big textile mills, they're gone. The big steelworks, the big coal mines, they're gone. And but what remained were like lots of low skill jobs and who knows if they're going to be automated. But yeah, you've got an entire economy that's sort of addicted to low skill migration and low interest rates, banking policy. So very, very hard, Fabian. So I still do think there is a residual. As every great people in human history, like the Persians, you know, the Persians were, I think, occupied for so much of their history, the Poles, they always bounce back, the truly great nations of our history. So if any nation that is as great as Britain can do it, it's them, but very, very hard. So I would not put a figure on it, but probably, let's put a figure on it. I'm like, it's 50-50, which doesn't say much. Yeah.
Well, again, I believe in miracles.
Yeah. No.
And I'll put it to you this way. It was David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, who said, if you don't believe in miracles, you're not a realist. So I'll end it. Today, on that note, we have still many points to talk about. There's so many things happening right now, including the papacy, Germany, Trump, Israel, Trump and Saudi Arabia, the Muslim world. I mean, all of those developments that are happening, it's going to be fascinating to reflect on them because there's so much that is reminiscent of what happened in Trump's first term that he's doubling down on in this term. And I am really, really, really interested to see how a lot of these developments are going to take hold. Trump and Syria, you know, what will that do? Could a possible economic recovery of the Middle East also be an incentive for a lot of migrants in Europe to move back to the Middle East, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all interesting points that we'll cover in another show.
Yeah,
but I'd like to teaser our next episode. So it was a great episode today, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Likewise, what a time to be alive and in the news business. So take care and see you next week.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Bye.